It's a great pleasure to be back to Santa Barbara, especially from Wisconsin. Well, you know, Grisha knows the particular story that I want to tell. And this is a story by a Russian comedian. He was performing as if he were a lecturer who was preparing to give a talk for the young mothers of newborns. And he prepared a good, nice lecture, but when he came, he found that it was a mistake, and instead of young mothers, he was supposed to talk to the bank accountants. And so he decided to change in his script where he was would be saying baby to bank accountant. So that was there is some similarity with my today's presentation, because Grisha told me that there will be a mixed audience, but it was only last night that I
young mothers or bank accountants.
Okay, so it will be rather challenging for me to satisfy both our audiences, but I'll try to do my best. So I will be talking about a connection in turbulent media, and usually I'll demonstrate this simple devices, which are magnetic fields. And to explain what is the connection with these devices, it's easy to show that. We have two magnetic fluxes, and they try to pass through each other. And if it happens successfully, we have a connection. If we don't, we don't have a connection. Well, my talk is a relation of turbulence, which is sometimes associated with waves, and a connection. And I like in this relation a particular cartoon by Dmitry Uzdensky, who is claiming that it's nothing new. A connection is always associated with waves, but these are hand waving. So this is a particular type of wave, but we'll try to use more, you know, physically motivated types of waves. So one of the things when I give this talk that people actually torment me with is, where do you get this turbulence? Where is the turbulence coming in your model? And because I'm talking about pre-existing turbulence, I'll start my talk with a discussion of turbulence in astrophysics as it is a ubiquitous phenomenon. Again, for the turbulent community, this is well-known character, and this five-thirds law is well-known, so I will not talk about that, but instead I just say that, for example, when we have spacecraft measurements, we do see five-thirds law of fluctuations. This is Lemon et al. 1998 paper. You also see this particular change to the seventh third, and it also has a justification. For example, these are some of our simulations of EMHD, which support the idea of seventh third EMHD. So this is an additional somehow evidence that we are dealing with turbulence. And by the way, after my talk, I know that my colleague Andrei Bereznyak will be talking about this five-thirds law in MHD turbulence. So I will not be dwelling upon this particular point. Right. So, what about other media? Is it only SolarWind that presents us with turbulence? No, it's ubiquitous. And for example, interstellar media shows big power law. In fact, this power law has the slope of 5/3. This is the particular slope of 5/3. And earlier on, people were only talking about electron fluctuations on the scale up to the astronomical units, while over there everything was very unclear. Recently, with my colleague Alexei Chepurnov, we addressed this issue, and we were using Wisconsin H alpha MAPPA data, which is also sensitive to the electron fluctuations. And we obtained this part. So for many orders of magnitude, from parsecs to astronomical units, we have a 5/3 law. But these are density fluctuations. So one may wonder whether this is actual turbulence. To study turbulence, probably you need some velocity information. And information of this sort is imprinted on spectral lines. So we know that turbulence broadens emission and absorption lines. And if we have a telescope, in this case, we can, for example, measure spectra at different parts of our sky and use this data then to construct so-called velocity data cubes. And together with Dmitry Pogosyan, we developed a technique which can be used to study velocity fluctuations, spectral velocity fluctuations, when we know spectral data at different points of the sky. So we take this PPV cube, which is different from position cube. It's position, and this is velocity, and we analyze slices of...
Do you have to do this kind of observations at the sea level or in the mountains?
Sea level, it depends on the wavelength which we are using. Usually atmosphere interferes, so as you know, big optical telescopes are built on Hawaii somewhere at higher mountains to decrease the atmospheric fluctuation. But this technique can be also useful in radio, with radio data where atmosphere is of marginal importance. So it's just an illustration that I'm showing. So what is the mathematical setting of this?
Yes. So this technique gives you all three components of the velocity?
No, it Doppler shifts are only sensitive to one component, only to the line of sight component. And so using this line of sight component, we get essentially turbulence of this line component.
And wave numbers, you get them in the plane. The plane.
Well, I'll go to that in a bit. Next, I'll answer this, because there are two techniques that we developed, and one indeed uses differences in separation, and another it does not use it. Okay, so what is the numerical mathematical setting of this? And, well, probably not for this audience, which is much more advanced than the usual audience I'm talking about. I write as brace yourself, marshal all your strength, but it's very simple indeed. This is a description of your density in position velocity data cube. And what it is? Position velocity data cube is a point in this previous data cube, but it's obtained through the integration along the line of sight of your actual density with the velocity distribution function. And what is the velocity distribution function? Again, it's very simple. It is simply shifted Gaussian. Gaussian shifted by the turbulent velocity. And then we create a new characteristic, new statistics, which is correlations in correlation functions in PPV, in position-position velocity. With some mathematics, we can obtain the relation between this correlation function in PPV and correlations of velocity and density in real space. It's a bit more complicated expression, but it can be used to obtain whatever we need. And this is a particular example of using it with molecular line data. So changing the thickness of our slices, position-position velocity slices, with the thickness in velocities, we're changing this channel, we are getting different spectra of fluctuations within the channel. And with our formula, we can obtain from that in terms of the thinnest channels velocity, and then going to the thickest channels, we get density. Because when we have all integration of all velocity, the only thing is column density that matters.
Okay. Yeah. You've made a derived formula. What do you assume? Isotropic turbulence? What are our assumptions going?
The assumption is, homogeneous turbulence. That's natural. You don't need to use the assumption of this isotropic turbulence. The Goldreich-Seidha turbulence measured in the global system of reference, where we have scale-independent anisotropy, also works. So, but this is answer to Hussein's question, what can use. Yes, we can use the fluctuations within the channels, and in this case we need spatial separation of our emitters, but we also can use the fluctuations along the velocity axis. And this is very advantageous way of studying turbulence when we do not have full coverage of our image. We have a sparse sampling of our volume. And this is, for example, can be used for clusters of galaxies studies. Even with HST UV adsorption lights, can be used to study turbulence this way. So, to make this long story short, I would like to show you some of the applications of these techniques with the emphasis for this particular column. These are different selected measurements of turbulence, which we then using our techniques. This is particular the first technique, which we call velocity channel analysis, and it shows that spectrum of density tends to be shallower than Kolmogorov, while spectrum of velocity either Kolmogorov or tends to be more steep than Kolmogorov.
Those data on different scales of observed.
Yes.
So how different are the scales?
Scales are pretty different. For example, with SMC, the scales are from 40 parsecs to 4 kiloparsec. So these are substantially large scales. For some of these clouds, it's from a small fraction of parsec to 10 parsec. So this is...
GMCs in general can be quite non-homogeneous because they expect it to collapse, right? So
yeah.
It's, some studies assume that they have internal density profile which goes to R minus 2 or so.
Yes.
So how good is this assumption of homogeneous?
Yeah. That's a good question, but you see, when we have, for example, we did such a study, and it doesn't change much our assumptions if we are talking about the spectrum, about fluctuations on the scale substantially smaller than the scale at which the mean profile changes. Moreover, we found that if we use self-gravity quad, in this case we indeed change a lot the density, but velocity is not so much affected.
Following up on that, so do you understand the difference in indices by using a self-gravity curve?
I'll show you momentarily.
One last question, Alex. You didn't give any error bars, but about what roughly would you say was the size of the errors in your exponents?
It's a good thing. But you see, for example, at least we believe we pointed, for example, here because we believe that this is within our error bars.
Also the same exponents.
So this is application of this VCS where we don't have the full coverage. And does it correspond to our expectations? Yes, it corresponds to expectations for the supersonic turbulence, and this is, for example, density spectrum, and Andrea is here, he quoted this paper, which shows that as we increase the Mach number, the turbulence, the spectral of density fluctuation is becoming shallow, and the velocity spectrum becoming steeper. So, in fact, there is now a question, you know, how self-consistent is this picture? Because all our simulations are obtained with limited Reynolds and Lundquist numbers because of the numerical limitations. And while we understand that, for example, here we see compressible turbulence, this is structures corresponding to this velocity, and these are droplets corresponding to the density. We see that magnetic field influences the dynamics. But maybe this is still not realistic because we are still in a very different situation. And if we have a slow reconnection rate, it may be a very different picture. So this is, and in this case, we cannot use at all any numerical simulations to test MHD turbulence. Right, that's why I come to the second part of my talk, assuming that some of you at least believe that there is pre-existing turbulence in the astrophysical fluids, and rather than asking a question, what is the source of the turbulence? We should ask people who don't put turbulence in their simulations of a connection, where is your turbulence? If you want to really describe astrophysical situations. So,
Alex, what is the motivation just for non-astrophysicists? So you're interested by reconnection, but for its own sake, also that you need to explain some astrophysical phenomena. So So give us a quick picture.
I'm interested in astrophysical consequences. And if we have this magnetic field, and we know that fluids are turbulent, what we will have? We will have structures which will behave like jello. And there are some, for example, interstellar media specialists, for example, very well-known experts on interstellar media, Don Cox, who does believe that interstellar media is like jello because we don't have fast reconnection. It's inevitable. You start moving this...
So you're asking for some elastic?
Yes. Okay. It's becoming elastic and it's not turbulent. Turbulence in this case just waves. There is no strong turbulence, only weak turbulence. And it's a different world. And please don't use computers to simulate this world, at least with present where they caught. So now, let's discuss why the a connection is slow in the classical Sweet-Parker model. This is a model where you have two-dimensional configuration, but it can be generalized for 3D, no problem, you may have a shared component. And over here, you have laminar magnetic fields, everything is frozen in, and here it's a... wake up. Also frozen in. But when you bring magnetic field lights close enough, they start diffusing and induce a connection. The plasma in this from this connection escape with alpha velocity, and everything works, but very slow. Why it is so slow? Because in astrophysics, this is astrophysical distance. And this is microphysical distance. If you move, you need to move everything, all the plasma, with on this large scale, and just push it through a very thin slot, it will be slow. And this is what you get. You get Lundquist number to the 1/2. So a connection velocity scale, alpha velocity, and this Lundquist number 1/2. And for interstellar media, it easily can be larger than 10 to 12. For intercluster media, it can be 10 to 20. So it's very tiny rate if we believe to the Sweet-Parker. Surely you cannot explain solar flares. Solar flares require substantial release of energy. And to explain this, Petchek suggested some ingenious way of solving this problem. He said, okay, I don't talk about this general problem, what's happening in turbulent media, you have this elastic structures. I don't know what's happening there. But I know that some mixed flares. Let me try to explain this phenomenon. And he said, how can we do? The problem with Sweet-Parker, we have big disparity of scales, as I told you. This large scale here, astrophysical, tiny scale here. Let me bent magnetic field lines. And instead of solving this problem, solve a simpler problem where magnetic field lines just touch each other at the point. And in this case, there is no contradiction, no problem. If we allow that the two scales are the same, in this case, we can have a connection with the alpha velocity, and then we can explain solar flares. This is Petchek's solution.
But then the field is weak locally, no?
No, the problem is how to bend it, how to make it stable. And when people started using computers, they found that it's unstable, it goes to Sweet-Parker, unless you use some plasma physics. And this was a big deal. When people found that, for example, when they include some plasma effects, for example, Hall MHD, they can get stabilization of this the point. And some people say, okay, we solved the problem. No problem exists anymore. But to do this, you need collisionless environment. There are also problems even with collisionless environment, but if this is applicable only to collisionless environment, many people are in the position of this scientist. I'm your guardian angel, and I think it's time you knew that for the past 37 years, you were barking up the wrong tree. So everyone who are doing astrophysics numerical simulation, at least in the interstellar media and in many other fields where you have a deal with collisional fluids, are in this unhappy situation. So is it really true? Well, when people have troubles solving something, they say, oh, maybe there are magnetic fields. Well, if magnetic fields are already invoked, people say maybe there is turbulence, right? So people were also saying maybe there is turbulence, and there were different ideas, interesting ideas, how turbulence can change the connection rate. For example, there were, it started in the 70s, Spazers discussed the effect of stochasticity in collisionless plasma. There were considerations how you can change the diffusion and therefore can change resistivity due to turbulence. There were many other ideas, but they were all changing this an order of magnitude, maybe this scale, maximum order of magnitude, this scale of this outflow region, but we needed something more. Apart from this hyperresistivity idea, which, well, was more probably tomorrow, Greg will be talking about hyperresistivity. It's ill-founded, but well, we decided to go in a different way. We just said, okay, we have a very nice connection scheme. It's very robust. It doesn't need any additional physics. It's sweet. The only problem that it has is that it's slow. Let's think what will change when we introduce turbulence to it. So it is naturally will be changed. And how? In 3D, we'll have not the straight lines, but wiggly lines. There will be a field line wandering. Moreover, in three dimensions, these magnetic field lines will be easily passing each other, okay? So they will be passing, and instead of just, you know, connecting line by line, we can connect many field lines simultaneously. We reconnect these many field lines simultaneously, but then you say how this outflow will happen. It will happen due to this field wandering. We'll have a much broader outflow region. And so this outflow region will not be like in the Sweet Parker, constrained by microscopic parameter of resistivity by this field wandering, and changing this field wandering by changing the level of turbulence, we can have a connection up to the Alfvén speed. So, doing this analysis, Ethan and me found that a connection does not depend on resistivity. It does not need any anomalous effects, and it works well. We wrapped into a quantitative prediction that I will show in a minute. All right. After we did this in 1999, when I was at CETA, and big bonus here, so it was a very nice influence of theta, I think, for me. We were waiting just for people to confirm us with solar flare observations, and we were hopeful. These are our, by the way, predictions. What we predicted is connection speed scales as Alfven speed. This is injection scale. This is LX, the scale of the current sheet. Injection velocity, Alfven velocity squared. Because we considered that turbulence initially is weak. At the large scales, it's weak. Therefore, the scaling between the energy injection power and injection velocity is different from Kolmogorov scaling, and we have this formula.
It's basically weak turbulence type of.
Yes. We start with at the large weak turbulence, and then we, as in Goldberg said, however, picture go to the strong turbulence. So, but you see. Our competitors were also moving target. So this is when what we had in 1999. And later they said, okay, no. We also have blobs and other things. And when, for example, John Raymond approached me at some point, he said, how can I test with solar data? We said, okay, if you see very thick layers, you will prove our model. When he proved that there are thick layers, people who were doing homology said, oh, we also have thick layers, don't worry. So the only thing for us to prove that we were correct was to do simulations, and to do simulations, we needed someone who is more sophisticated than me or Ethan. We needed a good postdoc. Fortunately, we found it, and we started doing simulations. It was very challenging because we needed to do full 3D and to also include turbulence. This is the type of simulations that we had. Placing magnetic fields in the anti-parallel direction would be cheating. Why? Because in realistic situations, we always have them at some angle. And in exactly parallel situation, you can say, okay, you are just easily mixing magnetic field lines and there is no tension which is acting against you. No, we did it in the right way, I think. Let me show you some of our results. Okay. So these are our initial configuration. This is a cut through our numerical box. This is the current sheet, which is initially Sweet Parker. And at some point, we are. And this is, I don't know how to get rid of this. And it was, initially increase, we formed the Sweet Parker layer, then it was the same Sweet Parker. And when we introduced turbulence, this is a connection rate. It's increased substantially. It fluctuates also substantially, but the connection is substantially larger.
So how do you introduce the turbulence here? Is it forced?
Yes. Yes. We have a wavelet excitation of turbulence. So okay, this is a structure of magnetic field lines that we have. And you see, okay, you say you, sometimes people misunderstand me and they say, you bend magnetic field lines very strongly, therefore you induce this diffusion. The bending that I you see here is, in fact, I'm not sure that I'm doing it right. Let me see. Okay. I don't know. It's very strange. It's a bit distorted, but anyhow, this bending effect is not that we drive turbulence at supralphenic rate. We drive turbulence subalphenically. But this bending of magnetic field lines is due to the fact that we have essentially a reconnection. There is another animation that I'll show you and try to remove this. Wait, what did I say? Okay.
What's the beta of this plasma?
This is a high beta plasma. This is a plasma around 5. This is, yeah. So we used high beta to get rid of additional instabilities that accompany low beta plasma. Because in low beta plasma, we have a lot of energy releasing by the magnetic field. And therefore, it's becoming prone to additional turbulence excitation. And it complicates our analysis.
Drive it in with solenoidal motions?
Yes, solenoidal motions.
Solenoidal, with some spectrum or?
Only large scale. And we, yes, we avoided this. Therefore, we needed a substantial cubes. The largest cubes is 1,512 in the middle. Okay. Right. Let me go and show you. Okay. Then there is another issue, and this is the issue of how to measure the connection. A connection is annihilation of a particular component of magnetic field. And so we used one technique which is based on this Faraday law. But we just said that we need to have annihilation. So we calculate the absolute value of the component, the change of the absolute value of the component, and we derived the connection rate this way. And there is another way, which is more, naive way, just to see at which rate the flux is flowing into your box, because we have open boundary conditions.
Just a couple of weeks ago, we had quantum people who actually registered the reconnection of quantum vortex line by another way, by seeing fast events velocity. Actually, it's a very fast events locally. Is it something of this type here?
Right.
Unusually large locally and small scale, unusually large velocities.
Right. Yeah. You can do. We tried different things, including actually energy release, not velocities, but energy release. But that's what we how we can determine this local connection, right? But we were interested in this, global, and this was this was the best that we could think about in this situation. Okay, by the way, having these two techniques of measuring a connection, we could have a comparison. And for example, this is a case of this laminar sweet Parker reconnection. And this is this new measure based on Faraday law. And this is old measure just based on the inflow of flux. You say, oh, this is a huge difference initially. Why is that? This is very easy to understand. This is formation of the sweet Parker layer. You connect, but everything is adjusting, and there is no yet inflow. So it's well understood, but at longer times, they are identical. When we have a similar case of in the presence of turbulence, we also have old measure and new measure having the same rate. So one of our predictions was that in presence of turbulence, we should be independent on ohmic resistivity. And that's what we see. We have ohmic resistivity at different levels, and this is a connection rate. And initially we have different levels of a connection, but as soon as we introduce turbulence, this differences in terms of a connection, which amounts to the factor of 10, do not matter.
Where would it be if you put the ohmic resistance to zero?
Zero I have, I will show later. So these are our results. Turbulent connection does not rate does not depend on resistivity, and we reproduce nicely the sweet Parker result. So we also predicted, as I showed you, a connection rate scales as injection of turbulent energy to the power 1/2, and here we change our injection rate by a factor of 20, and see that indeed the larger the turbulence, the higher the connection rate, and this is our prediction with our data points for different guide fields. So this is the answer to this question, whether what's happening in the absence of ohmic resistivity by only with for instance numerical resistivity, and we use this here we also were changing the anomalous resistivity. We were introducing, apart from numerical resistivity, anomalous resistivity to mimic plasma effects. We have one fluid, and therefore to introduce plasma effects, we introduce this anomalous resistivity. And you see there is essentially no difference whatever we use. So we conclude that nothing depends on our anomalous resistivity and our own plasma effects. Right, so it's very difficult to observe a connection. Solar flares is one of the examples when we observe reconnection. So, can we explain solar flares? One thing you can say, it's not the most advantageous way of testing this turbulent reconnection idea, because there we can say that we have definitely collisionless media. But let's still think about this, because we showed that nothing may, in our simulations, depends on this collisionless effect. What is a solar flare? A solar flare is a two-stage process. First stage is accumulation of flux, because any explosion requires accumulation of flux. If you have fast reconnection and don't have accumulation of flux, you bring magnetic flux, it annihilates. It's a flame. It's maybe a very strong flame, but not an explosion. So you first accumulate the flux and then ignite it. In our model, we predicted this is a natural process, because if initially your level of turbulence is low, you can accumulate magnetic flux. But later, you start connecting, and the situation is unstable, because outflow increases turbulence, turbulence increases reconnection, increase reconnection increases the outflow, and this is a runaway process. So
let me see if I got it right. So what you're saying is that as magnetic flux locally growing, velocity increases. Because magnetic field pushes velocity out, and this velocity would create turbulence, which would make reconnection.
Let me rephrase this. So I accumulate magnetic flux, and they claim that situation is unstable, because small perturbations in the system, small noise, will increase a connection, according to our model.
Okay.
This will increase the outflow. There will be more matter going out.
Mm-hmm.
This would create more noise, more turbulence.
Okay. So and this is explosion.
Yeah. It's explosion, exactly. So this is was one thing. Wake up. Okay. Right. Then, as I told you, we predicted this thick current sheets, and we also in our paper predicted the triggering of ray connection by magnetic waves, but alpha waves. And people recently observed that as soon as perturbations propagate, they initiate new zones of ray connection along the motion. Right. So there are also indirect pieces of evidence of this a connection to happen, and I just name a few of them. For example, we predicted acceleration of anomalous cosmic rays, which were seen in Voyager. I will say a couple of words later. Then Clebsch-McMay explanation of cosmic ray anisotropies. Then also in terms of the observations of the interstellar media, absence of the correlations of density magnetic fields, fast removal of magnetic fields much faster than ambipolar diffusion can allow from the protostellar cores, and there are many other things. Moreover, there will be tomorrow a talk by Greg Eink, who will discuss the relation of our model and his ideas on spontaneous stochasticity. So it has a different facet that you will hear tomorrow. Right. So from this list, knowing that there are people who are doing clusters of galaxies here, I decided to just mention one application. And this is acceleration of cosmic rays by connection. In clusters of galaxies, it's controversial whether we have, for example, shocks. A lot of shocks, enough to accelerate, but we definitely have magnetic fields of different polarity, and they should introduce a connection. We discussed this process with my Brazilian collaborator a few years ago, and we considered a very simple situation. We considered a magnetic flux tubes which is shrinking its size, and it has cosmic rays entrained on it. You can either think about Liouville's theorem, your magnetic, your particles are constrained in a volume and this volume is shrinking, or you can consider that you have two mirrors which are coming together and particles bouncing back and forth between these two mirrors get accelerated. So if we have, and this is important, if we have a tight connection between cosmic rays and magnetic fields, we expect acceleration, and we predicted a particular law of this acceleration.
It's somewhat two-dimensional picture, and it's actually three-dimensional. So can they escape in third dimension before being sufficiently accelerated?
This is an excellent point, and I'll show you how 2D the difference from 3D. Yeah, so, but this is something very simple. Later, Jim Drake also came with the same idea, but he thought about collision, let's say, connection. The physics of the acceleration is the same.
Can you motivate the spectrum?
Pardon?
Can you motivate the spectrum? Why you get the spectrum?
In this situation, this is the spectrum obtained without considering any back reaction and the somehow derivation is the same as minus 2 for the shocks. So you have escape of cosmic rays together with outgoing flux, and you have collisions between the two mirrors, essentially. Okay, so there, but these are now the numerical simulations, and well, you don't see anything on this. I unfortunately see it's much better. Okay, but it's maybe better to see here. This is in 2D, if we have a loop. In 2D, this three-dimensional loop is becoming close to dimensional ellipses. And we send particles, we see acceleration, and this is how a particle is getting accelerated there. Actually, it's... I will find the answer to your question. I did not put it here, but indeed in 3D and 2D we see a different picture. It's more complicated than this simple picture. But in terms of the applications, this is one of the applications. When Voyagers crossed termination shock of created by our solar system, they expected that we'll see a substantial change of the properties of anomalous cosmic rays. So cosmic rays generated not by the galaxy, but somewhere within our magnetosphere, but they didn't. So the question was, how could it be that we don't see the change when we pass this termination shock? Well, what's happening in terms of magnetic field? Our sun is an inclined rotator. And when it rotates, it creates such a spiral of changing magnetic field. And as we go further and further, the distances between the spirals are getting smaller and smaller, and we expect a connection. Termination shock is here. The heliopause is actually much, much further. And so we expect a connection to be more, most of a connection to happen closer to this heliopause. And therefore we expect the sources of cosmic rays be not here as people expected, but much further. Then there was also an effect which we already discussed in our paper with Offa, but recently we applied to some other data, Milagro data and IceCube. They found the anomalies of cosmic rays in a particular direction, which coincided with heliotail. And it was not clear why heliotail should correspond to enhanced flux of cosmic rays. In the picture with acceleration of particles by connection, it's natural because we have the change of magnetic field polarity due to this dynamo effect, 11-year cycle. And so as solar wind pushes magnetic field lines, we'll have the areas of magnetic field of one polarity and changing polarity another 11 years. And as a result, everything accumulates along the heliotail, and then we expect there to have efficient acceleration. So this is just one of the possible processes where this process can be expected. But to conclude, I would say that in realistic astrophysical simulations, situations, the sweet pucker picture is oversimplified. It does not take into account pre-existing turbulence. And as soon as we include pre-existing turbulence, the nature of a connection changes. And I think we can explain this way the existing astrophysical data. Okay, thank you.
Any questions left?
Yeah.
These magnetic lines interact, coalesce, what you have described. Is there a characteristic size associated to the bundle of magnetic lines which have been connected?
To what?
To the
bending?
The bundle. Many of them which...
I consider that this is one flux tube. Yeah. This is another flux tube.
How many can you put together?
How many flux tubes? As one you want, many. This is elementary act. This can be as thick as a spiral arm of a galaxy if we are talking about galactic dynamo. But it has, I don't know how to characterize the number of magnetic field lines.
The size of the turbulence, for instance.
Just the size of the turbulence.
Is there a relationship between the maximal size of the bundle?
No, there is no relation between that.
Spring scale of the top.
No. There is no relation in our at least model. In our model, we consider that we have semi-infinite bundles, which are coming into interaction, and then we have turbulence with a given scale. Yes, a given scale, and we predict the dependencies on this scale as well on the driver.
Okay. I was curious. You're aware of Biscamp, Concert. They talked about this anomalous resistivity. They said if you replace a molecular resistivity by an arm resistivity, then one is able to go from the Swift Parker to the Petschek and all those things. So, I mean, were they already thinking along these lines?
Right. So this is what I mentioned, showing this result in collisionless plasma. People indeed the end of previous century got very excited that when they put this whole term, they start getting stabilizing Petschek scheme, and they were saying this is the solution. Then, first of all, not all fluids are collisionless. And already there is evidence that a connection happens in also collisional and fast in collisional environment.
But in a magnetosphere, the plasma is collisionless.
Yes, that's true. But I think Greg will. You don't want to talk tomorrow. So okay, he's not going to talk. Okay, in this case. Okay, so I'm not taking it from you. Okay, so what I'm just saying is what we suggested is something very generic. And if you, this structure, even if it is stable without perturbation, gets somewhat unstable as you start moving these magnetic field lines. So there are problems with that. So, but what we are suggesting is something very different. And I showed you, when we were in our testing, introducing this anomalous resistivity to exactly simulate this effect. Indeed, if we can have fast connection, but in the presence of turbulence, it doesn't matter.
Mm. One never knows.
Axel. As you know, the other proposal is that you have, if you have a low plasma beta, and in a low plasma beta, we are thinking that the turbulence is driven by the magnetic field itself. And so you do this by footpoint motions, twisting motions at the foot points of the magnetic field lines, and that leads to breakup of the magnetic field along the arcade that has been simulated by Okunodun and Galsgaard, as you know.
Right. Actually, it's good that you mentioned this work by Oke, because hopefully tomorrow we'll submit a paper with the first author is Greg. It has been submitted, but to AstroPH.
Pardon?
To AstroPH.
Yes.
To our archive, where we discuss how, for example, Orca's work is related to our work. And we come to the conclusion that it's marginally related. Although,
but I mean, that model applies to low plasma beta.
Right, but we are not limited ourselves to plasma. It's similar to this issue. We are not talking about plasma effects in some sense. We are talking about very generic generalization of the Sweet-Parker scheme. So there could be additional effects that Oki considered, that Jim Drake considered. And in some sense, for example, they may help to initiate this flares, for example. But if you have pre-existing turbulence, my answer would be it doesn't matter.
Do you really think there is a source of turbulence which is different from that driven by the foot point motion?
Yes, yes, yes. You see, that's why I started with this my understanding of turbulence in astrophysical fluids.
What is the source of turbulence in?
In interstellar media, we believe these are, supernova motions. Some people refer to magnetorotational.
Atmosphere of the sun, where the plasma beta go.
Well, as I said, solar physics give us the examples of a connection that we can study, but the whole work, including your work, is, for example, you, I know, did an important contribution to the interstellar media, but it's not, or to the galaxy, it's not justifiable if you don't have fast reconnection in collisional media as well.
I think in this particular case, you're talking about the sun.
I wasn't for the sun, I sort of think.
It's the picture of the flares all the time.
Picture of the flares, the most, easier.
Question.
Pardon?
What is the source of turbulence in that place?
The source of turbulence, as I mentioned earlier, our model is that originally we have very little turbulence. And so then the outflow initiates turbulence, and it is not related to the foot point motions. And that's what I was saying. Solar flares in our model is a two-stage process. First, you accumulate the flux, and for this you move foot points, but this does not result in solar flares. Then they are sitting for some time, this magnetic flux of the opposite polarity, and this configuration is unstable to the noise which is being initiated by the outflow. So the faster the outflow, the more turbulization you induce, the faster the reconnection, and this is instability.
So outflows from local reconnection events, right?
Okay, maybe we'll just move into a break, and then we can continue discussion already. And so let's send speaker again.